The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. This is a show that helps you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better driving school. As always, I am your splendid host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but I'm even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because today we are joined by Kieran Williams of Driving Mobility, who is talking us through the recommendations from the recent survey that they did, which over 600 of you took part in. And there's some pretty bold recommendations in there. So first of all, listen to the episode. But secondly, check out the report afterwards. It's a really interesting read. But just before we get stuck into this, I want to point you in the direction of the Instructor Podcast Premium. Because if you enjoy these episodes, and a lot of you do, you will enjoy the Instructor Podcast Premium even more. It's where we go full on deep dive into a whole host of topics with some of the best people from inside and outside the industry, and you get even more Terry goodness. I'll let you decide if that's a good thing or not. But the best way to join up is patreon.com/theinstructor, or you can find a link for that in the show notes. But for now, let's get stuck into the show. So we are now joined by Kieran Williams of Driving Mobility. How are we doing today, Kieran?
Really good, thank you. Thank you for having us on.
No problem. I'm delighted you've joined us today. Do you want to actually just take a moment to start by just telling us about your role at Driving Mobility and also why you are here?
Thank you very much, Terry. Yes, so I'm Kieran Williams. I'm the project manager for the Driving Mobility ADI project, which is looking into the challenges of the disability driving sector and the challenges that ADIs and the public find to access disability driving and lessons within that. So you had my colleague Jackie on probably a year ago now. And she presented the survey that Driving Mobility were running at the time to try and get instructor insight into the barriers of entry into the disability driving instructing space. And, you know, we're really, really pleased with the response and the quality of the response. That's now all been analysed and put together in a, you know, fairly sizable report, which has, you know, been a lot of work at Driving Mobility's end. And we are very, very pleased to be able to say that we have now published that report, and we're now looking for instructor feedback into the findings of that report, and then going from there, delivering on those findings for and with instructors.
Excellent. Well, I will include links to that report in the show notes and other instructor podcast places. But I have read the report. I can't remember it all, but that's why I've made notes, so we're good to go. But 605 driving instructors completed this survey. I think I want to start off by asking you how you feel about that number.
So we had an initial figure of about 400 that we were targeting. So actually, I'm very positive about the number. 600 instructors took time out of their day to fill out a 10-15 minute survey, and I can promise you now that some of them took far longer than 10 or 15 minutes to fill it out. The detail that instructors chose to share with us was fantastic. Now, absolutely, you could look at it the other way, that there's 40,000 odd instructors on the register and 600 of them filled it out. And yeah, in one way you could look at that as not brilliant. But as I say, the quality that those 600 provided was what made this report.
It's interesting, because I don't want to get stuck on this too much, but I do look at that both ways. So I'm genuinely pleased that you beat your target of 400. Disappointed that you set a target of 400, not like 4,000. Yeah. But I'm also really pleased at the quality of response that you got. But I don't know, for me, I do find it disappointing. We have this discussion all the time whenever the DVSA does a survey of the number of people. But out of 40,000 driving instructors, only 605 could be bothered taking 10 minutes out of the day to fill it in. I do think I view it that way. And I would encourage anyone listening now that didn't fill in the survey to go and read the report. Well, even if you did fill in the survey, go and read the report and form your own conclusions into that. But I think the question I want to ask you around that number, one more question, was, so the 40,000 plus people that didn't fill it in, Would you imagine that they're not providing specialist tuition? Do you think they fall into that category? Is that a weird bracket?
I think nearly every instructor could be delivering something that is could be defined as specialist. You know, one of the bits of information that's come out of the report is many instructors feel that doing instruction with neurodiverse clients is now part of their everyday job. And I think, you know, you could ask pretty much any instructor in the country, have they worked with someone who's dyslexic, got autism, has some sort of neurodiverse need? They'd probably say yes. And so are those 40,000 that didn't fill it in not doing anything that could be described as a specialist? No. But are they actively targeting those people? Probably the answer is also no. You know, there's a Facebook page, Driving Instructors with and for Disability. That's got about 3,000 members on it. Now, it's still, I'd have liked to think that all 3,000 of those members did have a look at this. But, you know, when you look at the engagement into surveys for instructors or anything, 20-odd percent of those people responded to that. And, you know, I think most surveys would be quite pleased with a 20% response rate from their target audience. And I'd say that 3,000 number was more our target audience. So is it frustrating? Absolutely. I would have loved 40,000 responses, but equally, would we have been able to handle 40,000 responses?
It's a valid point. I read some research once saying that if you stopped 100 random people in the street, it does give a fairly accurate representation of the general population. But does that work here, do you think? Because we're not stopping 100 random instructors. No. That people are choosing to do it. So you think the risk is almost that we're actually targeting the instructors that care rather than the ones that don't?
So I'd argue that the instructors that care are nearly who we need to be speaking to on this. You know, there is a lack of disability driving instructors in the UK. That's a fact. There's around about 100 to maybe 125 cars that are adapted, that are delivering lessons in the UK. So again, 600 people responded, 100 to 125 of those have got adapted vehicles. I'd say that's a brilliant figure that we've managed to achieve, if you look at it in that way. And I know it's positive spins and all of that, but, you know, there's another 400 odd people there who haven't got adaptations in their car. So how could those people, you know, access this and increase the provision nationally? And that's the starting point. Equally, you know, there's 40,000 people out there. How many of those even know about the sector? How do we get to them? How does this develop? And I think those are a lot of the questions that we've now got, you know, out of this. And we've not got answers to a lot of these questions. And this is, again, where we're coming to you as and your podcast and your listeners, because they provided us with such great insights before. Can they do it again?
I mean, before we get into the report, though, one other thing you said there that I don't think it had quite clicked for me previously, but you mentioned about most instructors will work with someone that's sort of on that neurodiverse spectrum somewhere. And I do, you know, regularly, whether it's, you know, ADHD, autism, or whatever it might be. I wouldn't consider myself a specialist, but I'm still teaching it. So do you think that there's a lot of instructors out there that potentially call themselves, I think actually both ways, so potentially call themselves specialist when they're not, because they haven't done any training. It's just that they've got a couple of students who are neurodiverse. But then also the flip side of that, instructors not realizing how good they are at working with these students because they just do it now and again. And do you think that
happens? I actually think your flip side of there's more that don't call themselves specialists and don't recognize what they're doing is important is probably more the answer. And it's, you know, it's again, how can this sector support those people? You know, we know that the world is going more automatic. More instructors coming from manual into the automatic world will meet more people with more varying learning needs. And it's how does this sector support people? You know, I'm also a sports coach. And as a sports coach, you know, of a general sports club with a level 2 qualification, which is probably a lower qualification than the ADI qualification, I would be required to sit equity and diversity training. And that's a required thing to work at a club. And that would include information about neurodiverse needs and about how to support those people within my club setting. Now, we don't have any of that that's required for our sector. You know, that's where, as a management organisation, and who manages the sector, how can that be pushed into future, you know, training and requirements to make sure we cover everyone?
Yeah. It's so little, but areas have to do, you know, safeguard training, neurodiversity. It's so little. But anyway, back to this report. Tell me about this report. Tell me kind of your thoughts on it, your thoughts on the feedback. You know, give me your thoughts.
So, yeah, 600 individual instructors, 605 individual instructors fed in through their surveys, which is the basis for this report. From that, we did some stakeholder focus groups and some instructor focus groups, which included some of those, well, included some of the best submissions that we had from those surveys. And then we did three, I think it was, very targeted interviews that formed the evidence base for this report. That evidence was then independently analysed by a specialist in mobility and mobility travel. And that specialist looked at the themes that came out of the evidence. So no single piece of evidence or no single organisation or individual had more weight. So the DVSA fed into that, but they only had a score of one. And, you know, a general driving instructor, you know, their feedback only had a score of one. So it's the overall theme of that evidence that then was used to create the findings. And from that, the individual recommendations were then pulled out. And these are recommendations. You know, we've got 27 individual recommendations here. I believe they're all achievable recommendations, but they are a recommendation. They're not a how or a who or a when. Some of them are stretch targets that will take a long time to achieve, and some of them are probably quite quick wins that potentially could be done quite quickly. You know, when we're saying quite quickly, we're talking 6-12 months to action and start seeing an impact, where with stretch targets, you know, maybe five odd years. But Driving Mobility, as the charity, you know, they are absolutely committed to this report. It is not going to be a report that people have, you know, supported us with, conclusions have been made, and then sit on a shelf and just gathers dust. This is going to go somewhere. We are actively looking at the next stages and what funding looks like. We don't know what the next stages look like. And this is, again, where we're now coming to you, Terry, and kind of going, can your listeners help us? Because they really did provide huge amounts of insight into this initially. But how do we deliver on these outcomes? You know, we don't know all of the answers.
We'll come back on some recommendations a bit more. But it's just one thing I want to mention. Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to be pessimistic. But some of these recommendations involve the DVSA.
They do.
And so good luck is all I'd say with that.
So my message to you there is, we got the DVSA to the table. They were very, very engaged in the focus group that we did with the major stakeholders within this sector. Where it goes with them, who knows? But they are a key stakeholder of driving mobility. And I'm hopeful. I'm going to be very, very interested when we sit down with them to hear their feedback on this, to see what they say. And, you know, we will be following up on this with further follow-up reports. So we will be able to say, we've spoken to the DVSA and this is what they've said. And, you know, when there's stuff to say, I'd love to let you know about that.
Please do. I mean, look, I regard me and the podcast as a positive corner of the instructor world, but we'll maybe come back to that a little bit later on, because I want to just come back to this report because it is comprehensive. You know, I said this before we started recording, because I read the instruction of the report and it was talking about how how much is it? And then I'm thinking, how much can there be in this? And then I think got to like page 58 or something. I'm like, oh yeah, there's quite a bit. And I think it's a, is it a 64 page report? And it covers 68, a lot.
68 pages.
There you go.
And I cannot tell you how many times I've read it.
Well, the thing for me as well, I'm not the most, I always careful how I say this. I'm not the most well-educated person, but I can read this part and understand it. So I'd really advise that anyone listening to this, go and take some time to read it, because I think it's fascinating. But I want to sort of ask you specifically around sort of the barriers to entry, because this is something that was highlighted quite prominently, a part of sort of the reasons why driving instructors don't get involved in this sector. So do you want to talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah. So at the start, Driving Mobility had some ideas, and anyway, this report's not groundbreaking. It doesn't come up with the magic bullet, because actually I think you ask most instructors and they would come up with very similar answers into what the challenges are. They don't know how to enter it. When they do start to find out, it's high costs. You know, there is training available, but it's hard to find. It's hard to navigate. There's quite high cost to some of it. And that was the sort of thought process that we came into it with. And, you know, the seven key findings are cost, lack of training, complicated legal frameworks, the service distribution across the country is patchy, the support infrastructure, and there is some there, but it's not enough. Public and learner access is difficult, and there are long waiting lists, and some areas are just hardly covered at all, if covered. And then the one that probably is a bit interesting to me was more around the language and terminology that's used. That was probably the little bit surprise, is that as instructors, we're not confident in the language. And Driving Mobility, you know, put the hand up with this. At the start of the project, Driver Mobility and the Mobility Foundation, who's the funder of this report, used the words specialist instructor. And quite quickly, the feedback was specialist in what? And then we got the words like disability specialist instructor or neurodiverse specialist. And does the sector need a name at all? And there was big conversations, especially in the focus groups around this. And the big answer is, you know, from a personal point of view, we do need a name as a sector. What that name should be, question mark. So that's going to be one of the things that we're asking instructors to feed back into, is what should the name of the sector be? What should a disability instructor be called, or a specialist instructor? And there needs to be a catch-all term, because how do people Google that? You know, if you're trying to find something, you write a very specific term. And then the follow-up piece of work that we're going to do with this is we're going to go out to the public, and especially those who are neurodiverse and the neurodiverse organisations, and go, what do you think the sector should be called? These are what instructors have come up with, but actually what are the terms you use? What do you want the instructor working with you to define themselves out as? And I actually think that's, you know, a massively important piece of work, and just something we don't know.
What would your suggestion be? Where do you sit on this fence?
I think the best term we've currently got is disability driving instructor, specialist disability driving instructor. Would that catch people with lower end neurodiverse needs? Probably not. Specialist instructor is definitely not appropriate. Specialist disability and neurodiverse driving instructor is potentially a better term, but it then starts to become quite a mouthful. But, you know, instructor that specialises in learners with diverse needs doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. And would someone who is dyslexic, and I am dyslexic, would I search that term? Absolutely not. Would I search the term neurodiverse? Yes, I probably would. But I think it's working out what terms, you know, the community of people with disabilities and neurodiversity use, and then making sure that all of our Google links and our search terms hit those terms properly.
Well, I find it interesting, but also coming back to the barriers really as a whole, how much or how many of those do you think, if any, were down to either people not having the information, people misunderstanding information, or maybe the information being put across incorrectly?
Well, if you look at the legal side of it, Section 88. Are you aware of Section 88?
No.
Now, Section 88 is where someone's able to drive who's not currently got a valid driving licence. So their licence has expired and is sitting with DVLA, and DVLA are hopefully going to renew that licence. But there's a whole legal framework behind that, which is about as clear as mud. Now, I have, from the same organisation, had different advice on the implementation of something like Section 88. Would I be able to explain it in a nice clipped way that is easy to understand at this stage? Well, no. Should I be able to? Probably. But this is where it needs to have, you know, DVLA input, driver mobility input, Motability Foundation input, Disability Driver Instructors Association input to get a single, this is what it is, and this is what an instructor needs to know and how to deliver that. Now, most instructors won't come across Section 88, but when they do, who do they turn to, and are they getting a clear answer? You know, things like eyesight rules. We all go and measure our students' eyesight from 20 metres. But there's far more rules around eyesight than that. And if we've got eyesight concerns, what should we do? Again, I don't think that's as clear as it should be. And again, as you work more in the specialist disability side, and especially with older drivers, eyesight starts to become a real challenge. And having that correct, simple information, both for you and the client, is massively important. And that's just one area of this.
I think that's a great example, though, especially the Section 88 that you mentioned, because we should be experts as instructors, but we cannot know every single aspect of everything. It's virtually impossible. And I always think of tax and insurance, those examples. Yep. Someone comes with a tax question, I can offer advice, but I'm going to finish off by saying, speak to an accountant, you know, or speak to your insurance company. So I'm not the expert in that. So I think you're right. I think that getting that single body there that can give a definitive piece of advice or factual, you know, this is what it is, that will be awesome. Thank you. If you can get that sorted by end of the week, I'll be more than happy.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be the end of the week, I can promise you. But that, again, and that piece of information needs to be endorsed by DVSA, by DVLA, by government sources, by Driving Mobility, by the Motability and Motability Foundation. And then needs to be there. So when someone goes to, you know, one of the associations, you know, DIA, ADI, JNC, MSAGB, or goes onto one of the Facebook forums, that someone's going, oh, this is where it is. And this is the advice. But it needs to be recognized, not just it's there, but it's been written by an organization. And it might be absolutely correct, but it doesn't have that stamp on it that says government organization approved.
Yeah, the minute it'll have an asterisk that says depends who you ask and on what day.
And that's not useful.
Well, I'm still going to keep saying this, but I remember that's my other comment. Good luck. Just regarding the report as a whole, was there anything that surprised you?
Yeah, there were a number of bits. So, doing this, I've sat with a number of stakeholders. And, you know, even within driving mobility, I've sat with people who have said driving instructors are not interested. Now, there's 600 people there saying that driving instructors are interested. And there's a Facebook page saying another 3,000 instructors are interested. So being able to go to those stakeholders and go, you know, driving instructors are interested, but they don't know how. Once they do start to know how, the training pathway is not clear, the costs are high, and then when they start getting into the legal stuff, it's mind-blowing. And you're going into a new sector, and again, guidelines on how to advertise, how to gain clients, how to build that network, you know. When I started being a driving instructor, you put a face on Facebook, a post on Facebook, and, you know, within a couple of hours, you had 10 or 15 inquiries going, I need driving lessons. Well, that doesn't quite happen with this. You know, so how does someone advertise? That's all the stuff that's, you know, that's the top line of this, is that, yes, people are interested, but how? How much does it cost? How do we reduce that? Another one that definitely caught my interest, and this, you know, is one of the things that you've already picked up, is standards checks, DVSA, and the perceived lack of knowledge that examiners have or might have, and what training they have or haven't got. You know, I can't answer the question of what training a DVSA examiner does or doesn't have and what awareness they do or don't have. And this survey, and especially the focus groups, really highlighted the concern that a section of instructors have about taking a pupil with diverse needs, be that physical or neurological or neurodiverse, and going, test this person fairly. And, you know, they're going to be tested fairly and their result is going to be accurate to their needs. Now, that is going to require buy-in from government organisations. That is going to be one of the stretch targets. Is it going to happen? Well, hopefully. But that's where the conversations with DVSA, DVLA and the government is going to come. But that's been one that I think raised an eyebrow for me. And I think the other one, again, really came around the language of the sector and how people are not necessarily comfortable with the language the sector should use and how we should speak to clients or how we should refer to clients. And the biggest thing that I can give you as someone who, you know, I only work with people with some sort of additional need, be it physical, neurological or neurodiverse, and they know I'm trying to help them. And I am going to use the odd bit of clumsy language on occasionally. And it's never been a problem, you know. But, you know, how do we disseminate that information and how do we support people who want to come in and are concerned because they've got no background in it? And I think those are sort of some of the really bits that did just really pick my interest.
We're just taking a quick break. And while I've got you, I want to tell you something that'll genuinely make you a better instructor. See, if you listen to this on the public feed, you're only getting a tiny slice of what I do. The real conversations, the real teaching, the stuff you simply don't find anywhere else in this industry, that all lives inside the Instructor Premium. You know, we're talking full archive access, every expert session, every deep dive, every behind the scenes chat, plus new content dropping all the time. Video, audio, written pieces, all the workbooks for the episodes. It's the kind of CPD that isn't cookie cutter, it's not recycled, and it's not the same things doing the rounds over and over again. Now, if you like our talking here, you'll get the unfiltered version inside Premium. Straightforward, practical, and voices you genuinely don't hear anywhere else in the ADI world. So if you want to level up your teaching, your business, or your mindset, whatever stage you're at, come join us. Just head to patreon.com/instructor or tap the link in the episode description. But for now, let's get back to the episode. I try really hard not to generalize, but I feel like I might with this comment, so forgive me. But the aspect of working with people with disability or someone, you know, neurodiverse, I think there is a stigma or a fear that they're going to fail the driving test a lot more, which will then lead to more standards checks and stuff like that. And I don't know, from my experience, and again, I wouldn't define myself as a specialist in this area, but from my experience, when they're up to scratch in terms of the driving and the mental capacity around that goes with it, it doesn't take them longer generally to pass a driving test. I don't fail more often. Yes, there are exceptions to that, and I've had students with quite bad nerves and anxiety that has taken them longer to pass. They fail more often because of those nerves and anxiety. But I tend to find they're the exception rather than the rule. But they're also the ones that stand out, so they're the ones you remember. They're like, you don't remember the 1,000 people that don't BP that day, but you remember the one person that does. It's that kind of thing. And just a little story, because it just amuses me, this, because you mentioned about the sort of the examiners and the examiners dealing with neurodiverse students and so on. And again, from my experience, generally speaking, so I'm generalizing, examiners are good, decent people. They're good people. They go out and try. And I had a student last year, I believe it was, who was an autistic lad. And he asked me, will you have a word with the examiner beforehand and just tell him, you know, that I'm autistic and just tell him a couple of my traits sort of thing. I'm like, yeah, of course I will. So we walk into the car, kind of mention that so-and-so wants me to tell you that he's autistic. And there's two things I want to mention. One, just don't be ambiguous with directions. Make sure you're definitive. But also, his elbow tends to pop out now and again when he's changing gear and he might get an elbow in ribs. He's not doing it on purpose. And he's like, okay, cool. The examiner was brilliant. Yeah. Friendly, helpful, trying to be really... But there was one thing he kept doing, and this has to come down to training, because I have no idea what this was. Every time he pulled up, he said to my student, do you want a drink? And my student says, no, I'm okay. And he got to like the fifth time, and he went, have you got a drink I can have? And the examiner said, no. He went, well, what are you asking me for then? He just made me laugh, but he's like, just randomly asking if he wants to. I'm like, if you keep telling him, he's going to go into McDonald's drive-thru. And it just, But... You think that's an interesting one? I think, well, those two ones, the standards check thing and the do you think any of that is, I'm struggling for the word here, valid? Do you think they're valid concerns?
I think the actual thing is we don't know. I think there's probably a bit more data stuff that needs to be looked at. Now, firstly, again, probably the data won't be necessarily clear because, you know, we've got that drop-down menu that says, does this candidate have, you know, disabilities or additional needs? How many people are ticking the educational needs bit? Now, if that's being ticked, what information has then been given? So I think from a statistical point of view, that might be a difficult picture to look at, as I'm sure there are lots of neurodiverse students who would actually benefit from that sort of support that you've just said, that actually, you know, my student might elbow you. But they're not targeting your ribs. And it's like, that's just something that happens occasionally. That's a really, really good thing to be telling an examiner, because when it does happen, it's like, oh, where's that come from? And, you know, you're out of control of the vehicle. It just happens. So I think, you know, that sort of thing, you know, that's a great thing to do. But the statistical picture might be quite muddy. But also from a management point of view, is we don't know what training the examiners do have around neurodiversity. Around, you know, disability coding, about disability controls. And again, being able to have that conversation and being able to come somewhere like here and being able to go, driving examiners have X, Y, and Z. And, you know, this is what they're trained in, this is when they're trained in it, this is how they're trained in it, would be a really, really useful thing to be able to share, because that would then take some of that perception away. And then it's just a case of, you know, how that examiner implements that training. So is that, you know, going back to the question, is it a valid concern? Yes, I believe it is, because at the moment it is very much we don't know. So it's a perceived barrier. Is it a real barrier? Who knows? You know, only the DVSA know that.
Let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about some of these recommendations, or them as a whole, because there's a lot. And I am impressed with the boldness of some of these recommendations. As much as I was reading them, there was a couple, and I kind of said it already, but, you know, good luck. But I it wouldn't have excited me as much if they'd have just been like, add a word here or do this little thing. It's like, no, you've gone all out with this. So before we get into like how, there's a few that caught my eye that I'm just going to read out, and then we'll maybe get into the how. So a national body to deliver a training program that is CPD accredited, a national ADI directory, a scheme to alleviate financial constraints, a national body for referrals and support for ADIs, reviewing sector terminology, embedding training into PDI training, working with the DVSA for further examiner training, and building a national peer mentoring system. There's some impressive stuff going on there, Kieran.
It's an ice cream headache, isn't it?
No. Who's putting these in place? What happens with these? Where is this going? What's next? Those words, all those questions, make some out of that.
The big one's going to come down to pound signs. A lot of what we've said today, we could have had a chat together at any time and said, these are the challenges. But you can't go to government and you can't go to funding without evidence. And two people having a chat isn't evidence. 600 instructors and their data being analysed and the focus groups and the statutory bodies and the partner organisations coming in together and having this, having their focus group and all of this being fed into one document, this is evidence. So this is the first time, as far as I'm aware, that we've had a piece of paper that we can go, this is the situation, this is the challenge, this is the problem. These are suggestions of how that can be, what needs to be done. And then you can start to build up as, so this is what we're going to do. And this is where we are right now, is the, what are we going to do? So again, feedback from instructors who've read this report, you know, is massively important. Do you agree with our findings? And again, give us reasons why you agree or disagree. And actually, disagreement's massively important here. If you don't agree with something in this report, please feed it back, but it has to be fed back formally. It can't just be on Facebook. It has to be a, you know, through something that we can evidence as primary evidence. And then, you know, we can go to the stakeholders, get their feedback, and then we can start building a funding bid that we can then go, here's a big pot of money to do stuff with. So that's going to be the ultimate aim of this, is here's a big pot of money to do stuff. Do we actually know what the stuff looks like right now? Well, we have some ideas, but those are going to need much more formulation, and that's coming. And there is stuff out there. So, you know, the recognised body stuff, you know, there are bodies that represent instructors, but they need to be on the NASP. They need to be recognised by DVLA, by DVSA, and they need to be recognised by the instructors. Accredited training. There is training out there. Some of it has some accreditation, but again, it's having a real formalised accreditation that essentially government recognise. And these are big challenges. But if there's money there to do it, that it doesn't mean the government have to put their money in their hand in their pocket. And it might be governmental funding, but then that's gone through a proper funding procurement process. You'd imagine and hope that, you know, the DVSA, DVLA are going to want to come and speak to us and work with it. And again, as I say, how those outputs look, we don't know at the moment. We've got ideas, but this is where the next 6 months working with the stakeholders, working with instructors is going to be really important.
Where do instructors send that feedback? Where they provide feedback?
So we've got two forms of feedback. And ideally, we definitely want, yeah, anyone who reads this report, please, 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 please go onto the link, the feedback link. Now, most people will access this report via the Driver Mobility website. At the top, it says download a report. And at the bottom of the page, it says feedback. Click on that link. And it is literally, could be a 5-minute process. But as we found with the previous survey that we did, we know that some of you are going to write a lot more, and it will not be a 5-minute process. And that's brilliant, because that is the feedback we need. And then we're also going to be running 5 online feedback sessions starting on Monday, the 24th of November, 4 of them in the evenings. One of them is a Friday afternoon. Hopefully, Terry, you can provide the details to people of those, so I don't have to just go through all of them now. But they're your opportunity to ask me directly questions about this report, for me to ask you as instructors, okay, so you've read it, what's your thoughts? And then actually to ask you questions about, okay, so you've said this is something you've got an idea on, go please, this, because, you know, I'm an ADI, I only work with people with additional who require additional support. But I'm only one person. I've only got one set of ideas. And the amount of different people who came into this and provided different ideas and different bits of feedback, there's stuff there that I'd never have come up with. And that's where the value is right now. And we're doing exactly the same with stakeholders. We're going to each stakeholder with a copy of the report, and they're going to take time to read that and digest that. And, you know, that's not going to be such a quick process for some organizations, because they're going to have to come up with a centralized corporate response. But we're then going to sit down with them and kind of go, right, you know, these are the things we've identified. These are recommendations and findings that we've found against you that apply to you as that organization. What's your thoughts? Do you recognize them? And how do you think you could rectify them? While going, well, this is how we think, you know, funding and things could also support you to rectify those recommendations. And, you know, as you said earlier, some of those recommendations are a challenge. But as I read through this, I was sort of going, you know, one, these recommendations have to be achievable. You know, we couldn't say something like to the DVSA, we believe you should scrap all standards checks. Because that's, one, never going to happen. Two, is going to require an Act of Parliament to do. But actually, can we make sure that instructors know about the training that examiners have? I believe we can do that. Is it going to be easy to do? Maybe, maybe not. But if we didn't have things that stretched this and were a challenge, well, one, they should already been done. And two, would it have any impact?
It's interesting. I think that there's some stuff in these recommendations that I don't want to say they're quick wins because that trivializes it, but they're obviously easier to do than others. And there's some, as you said, that are quite challenging. But when do you think, and I realize this is probably a difficult question to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When do you think we will start seeing some of these recommendations being put into play?
So there are some quick wins, almost certainly. You know, Driving Mobility as an organization has got 14 recommendations that sit with it. Two or three of those are probably really quite simple and could potentially be done, you know, within 3-4 months relatively easily. Some of them aren't going to be achievable for years. We're going to produce two more very short follow-up reports, one at 6 months, one at 12 months. I would like to think that some of those quick wins will have been done within 6 months and that we could show who and how most of the recommendations will be done within 12 months. You know, not they're going to be done within 12 months, but this is what's going to be done. This is how it's going to be done. This is what's currently in place to try and achieve that. Now, some of it's going to be funding bids. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, an adaptation scheme, a potentially a car scheme for people to fit adaptations. You know, that's going to cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds. You know, do we have a figure on that yet? No. You know, we've literally only shared the report internally within the last week and a bit. So, you know, we've not had those conversations yet, even internally. And that is going to be a huge piece of money. And that's not going to be achieved within 12 months, almost certainly. But could we say how we think it's going to be achieved by the end of that 12-month point and say that there's a funding bid in or there's one being developed and, you know, that it's coming, hopefully, fingers crossed, and this is how we think it's going to look? I think within 12 months, we hopefully would be able to say things like that. And I think probably it's going to be pilot schemes to start with. I doubt it would be a straight national rollout. But, you know, we are talking about stretch targets where the quick wins, yeah, I'd like to think we got some within 6 months.
This is why I'm not good at these type of projects, because for me, a quick win is like a week within 6 months. So
yep.
This is where you've got my full respect, you guys doing this, because this is where I get very frustrated. But
yeah, and the thing is, they require multiple organisations. So although what looks like a very, very easy thing to just go and do, it's doing it. But it's not just setting it up, it's then making sure that people are aware of it and it's being used properly. And just going to do something which looks so simple on paper and could just be done over a quick conversation between two people, then does it get used? And that's, and you know, are instructors aware of it and how are instructors aware of it? And do we want to just drip feed things, or are we going to go, actually, here's a package of things now? And it's all done in one piece of communication rather than there's communication here, there's communication here, and there's communication here. And then that risks big gaps coming through just communication. You know, and we all can see how important communication is in what's happened in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, dear. We finished on a low note, and that's okay.
But actually, it's a positive thing, because actually, it is about the communication. You know, it's about making sure these things are communicated properly. And that's why I've come on here, is that this is a complicated report with lots of, you know, with pages and pages of information that, you know, it doesn't say what should be done. It says what could be get done. And it is what, you know, how do we do that? That's important.
You pulled it back round. You've turned my frown upside down, love them. For the people that have listened, what's one thing you would like people to take away from this from today?
I'm not going to give you one. I'm going to give you two, I'm afraid, Terry.
Well, that's okay.
So the first one is, please, 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 please fill in our feedback survey on this report. You know, am I expecting you to read every word of it? No. But please read, you know, the introduction and the first few pages, and then go and read the recommendations and the findings, because they hopefully will positively affect you as an instructor and the industry in the future. And two, Driving Mobility as an organization are committed to this report. We are committed to getting your feedback. Your feedback matters. This report isn't going to just sit on a shelf. And your feedback just doesn't go on to some web portal never to be read. It, you know, nothing has been decided. We have ideas, but they are ideas. They're not in stone outcomes. And, you know, the amount of things that came out of the previous survey work that we would never have thought about, you know, was so, so valuable to the previous bit of work. Your feedback now is so important to the future.
I think I'm going to ask you one more question.
Go for it.
And I think it's going to be a loaded one, so apologies. Maybe devil's advocate. Because I reckon there's going to be people listening to this that will hear you say the previous survey, and then hear you say feedback on this report, and then the feedback on that report.
Yep.
And
it's absolutely.
Like, how many reports do we have to do before we get stuff done? So, you know, how would you respond to that?
My response to that is, we've been having these conversations as individuals for years. I've been an instructor for 10 years. I've been calling myself a specialist for, seven? And I've had these conversations over and over again with instructors that I know personally at conferences. I've heard the conversations happen. I've had them with, you know, my local stakeholders. I've had them with, you know, my local test center. But as an individual, I can't do anything. And the response has always been, where's the evidence? And a conversation, one person saying something, isn't evidence. It's their perception. Unfortunately, you do need to have big written documents that you can send to a funder that they can look at, see how comprehensive it is, see that the research has been done properly, and that you're not just pulling figures out of the air and that they're not referenced properly, and go, well, this is the outcomes. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And it's got trust. So how many more surveys are there going to be? I mean, this is the big bit now. This is all about the feedback. This is leading into the funding bids that Driving Mobility are looking to submit. We are going to produce two more follow-up reports, because actually that's how we hold people to account. You know, again, if it's just done in conversation, there's not a piece of paper that you can go, this is what's been done and this is what's not been done, and this is who we think owns it. And as small independent businesses that, you know, driving instructors are, they are nimble. You know, if you want to do something, you can pretty much go and do it, can't you? But when you're dealing with major charities, thousands of pounds worth of potential funding, with government, with huge structures, nothing unfortunately happens overnight. but you need that documentation to be able to show them this is the challenge. Because at the end of the day, disability driving instruction, neurodiverse driving instruction is a niche of what they do. But it's a massively important niche for fairness, for equality, for the clients that we all work with. And having them taking it seriously and having them to have something that they can measure themselves against and we can measure them against as an industry, you know, it's not exciting, but actually it's what we ask for. You know, we want these organizations to be accountable, and that accountability comes through paperwork, unfortunately.
I like the answer. I like the answer. Do you want to take a moment to remind people where they can find you?
So, Driving Mobility are the charity that covers all the Driving Mobility Network centres. So that's where you go if you've had, you know, got someone who's got a physical disability, whether that's acquired or from birth, and you want to know whether they can drive, works with older drivers. And there are lots of opportunities for ADIs to work with them. So look for Driving Mobility on Google. You'll find all the information. And the best place to find the links to this report and what we're doing is in your show notes. That's going to be my response there, rather than giving you some convoluted www dot. Just go to your show notes and follow it from there, please.
Yep. Show notes, WhatsApp channel, probably emails as well. Check all that kind of stuff. But yeah, big thank you for joining me today, Kieran. It's been fun.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And again, thank you in advance to your listeners for one, the time that they spent listening, and two, for those who fill in the survey, because, you know, their support is what's going to drive this forward going in the future. So thank you.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.